We're doing Parashat Chayesara. We'll do a quick overview of the parasha, and then we'll review it more slowly and with more depth. In our parasha, Sarah, the matriarch, Abraham's wife, passes away. She has lived to the ripe old age of 127, and Avram comes to bury her. The people of Chet say, "We'll gladly give you anything, any place you want to bury your wife. We value you. You're a prince of God." And Avram thanks them. And he says, so then ask Ephron, I would like to purchase Me'aras HaMachpelah, this special double cave, to use it as a family burial plot, not only to bury Sarah, but to bury my family in the future. So Ephron says, you can have it. And Avram says, I appreciate it, but I would like to pay. I want to make it into a deal. And Ephron says, my master, what's 400 silver coins between buddies like us? Just bury your dead. And Avram says, no, I'm going to pay you full price now. We're writing it up. And he buys it, and he buries her. And then Avram calls in his, he mourns Sarah, and afterwards he wants to marry off his son. So he calls in Eliezer, and he says, I want you to go to my family, to my country, and bring a wife for my son Yitzchak. And he says, what if the woman doesn't want to come back? So he says, don't bring my son back there. God's brought me here, and I'm supposed to have this land, and Hashem should send his angel with you. You should succeed. If she doesn't agree, you don't bring my son there. You represent us to make a deal to bring the girl back here. So he promises Avram, and he takes 10 camels laden with the wealth of Avram, and he comes to Nahor. He comes, he's out by the well, and he says, Hashem, help me out. I'm going to stand here. The girls are coming out to draw water. I'm going to ask a girl to drink. And the girl that says, sure, I'll give you to drink. I'll even give your camels to drink. That's a girl that has a kind heart. And obviously she's fit for Avram's family. So he finishes. He's just finished making this deal with his creator. And Rebecca comes out. Rivka from the family of Lavan, the sister of Lavan, the daughter of Besuel. She's actually Yitzchak's cousin. And she's actually a young, good-looking girl. And he runs towards her and asks her, can I have some water? And she says, drink. She quickly gives him to drink. And then she says, I'll give your camels to drink too. And she pours out the pitcher. And she keeps drawing water for his camels. And he's watching. And when she finishes, he gives her all these gifts. And he asks her, who are you? Who's your father's house? And she says, I'm the daughter of Besuel. I come from Milcah, from Nahor. And he asks her, is there a place for me to stay by your parents? She says, sure, there's plenty of food. You're welcome. So he thanks Hashem. He comes to the house. And Lavan comes running out to greet him. He sees all these gifts that he's given the girl. He figures, hey, something in it for me. He says, come in. We're so happy you're here, right? He gives the camels to eat, and they say, come eat. He says, no, let me first say my speech. I'm the servant of Abraham. My master's been very blessed. There's a child who's going to inherit all of this, and I'm looking for a wife. And I made this deal with God when I came here, and here your daughter lived up to the deal. So now is it a deal or not? Wow, he's quick. He just walked into their house, and he says to them, you want to marry off your daughter? So they say, what can we say? You made a deal with God. It came true. So obviously this is a match made in heaven, right? You can have Rivka. She's all yours. Go. Wow, that was fast. So he gives them a bunch of gifts, and they're all eating and drinking. And then comes the next morning, and they suddenly say, wait, you don't mean to leave now. You don't mean to leave now. You're, let her stick around a little bit, let her prepare, and after a time, we'll send her. And he says, don't delay me. I've been successful. Let me go. They said, let's ask the girl. What do you mean? Just like that? They call Rivka. They ask, you want to go with this guy? So she says, yeah. So that's it. They said, she's going to decide. So they bless her. And as the servant is coming back with Rebecca, Yitzchak goes out to the field to pray. And he looks up. He sees the camels. Rivka asks the servant, who's that man? She sees a holy man. He says, that's my master. So she quickly covers herself with the shawl. That's our custom that a kala, before she comes to the chuppah, covers herself with the badekin. She covers with the shawl. And then Yitzchak brings her home. He marries her. And in the parasha, we find Avram marrying another wife and having children. And Yishmael has many children. And that's the end of our parasha. Okay, so now we have to understand what's going on here. Wow, what a parasha. Okay, let's begin. Although the Torah previously discussed people who died, the Torah never discusses people who are buried. Here we suddenly have a long discussion about the burial process. But before we get to that, let's go back to last week's parasha. We never got to finish last week's parasha. So at the end of the parasha, we have a phenomenal story of the Akedah. And that deserves a class in its own right. You guys can go online. We've done this before. So after this very emotional moment of Avram and Yitzchak, Yitzchak has his hands tied to his feet, and he tells his father, as they're both crying, he says, Dad, when you go to Mom and you tell her what happened here, make sure she's sitting down. Don't tell her when she's next to the well. Don't tell her when she's next to the cliff. Don't tell her when she's holding a blade or something. She might hurt herself. When you tell her what we did here, make sure she's sitting down. She shouldn't have a heart attack. You know, tell her slowly. Make sure she can handle it. And Avram's crying and Yitzchak's crying. Remember, just before Yitzchak prepared himself, they both sat down to pray. They prayed. We say it every time we have a fast day. Mishanat Avram Avinu Bara Moriah. He who answered Abraham on Mount Moriah. What does that mean, Abraham was answered? He prayed that Hashem should give him an out. He should give him another way to do this. Says prayers were answered. So the angel comes and says, God doesn't want you to do this. And Avram looks up and sees a ram running towards him. And the ram's horns get caught in the brush. In the thorn brush. We would say his horns got caught, so he shouldn't run away. So Abraham should have a ram to serve his creator. Comes Rashi, along come our sages, and say it's the exact opposite. The ram was running towards him. This is a ram that was created from the 6 days of creation. And along comes Satan and brings a brush, and the ram's horns get caught, and and suddenly Abraham has to go over to the ram and untangle it and bring it to be sacrificed. Why did Satan do that? What difference does it make if the ram got caught or not caught? So Avram comes and untangles it. No big deal. So I never saw an answer to this question. This question has been bothering me since I was a kid. And this year I thought to myself, maybe the answer is that Avram finishes this amazing test of the Akedah. He's reached the greatest height. And now Hashem tells him, okay, bring that ram instead. So the ram starts coming towards him and then gets caught. And Avram has to go deal with some thorns and brush. Very often in life, we're about to do a mitzvah, and we think, this is what Hashem wants me to do, and suddenly it becomes tough and difficult. And it's not pleasant. And we feel like, didn't you want me to do this? Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm making aliyah, why does it have to be so difficult? I'm doing the tshuva process, why does it have to be so uncomfortable? A person comes to light his Hanukkah candles, and then the next night he wants to switch the wicks and the oil, and suddenly his shirt gets dirty, the oil spills, and he feels like, I came to do mitzvah, couldn't it have worked out right? Do you have a better example of the Akedah? Avram is coming to do a mitzvah, and Hashem sends him a special ram, special delivery, and suddenly he gets caught, there's a hitch. When there's a hitch, sometimes we lose all flavor for the mitzvah. Sometimes we lose our desire. We can do it, but we're not smiling anymore. Imagine you're preparing your Hanukkah candles and suddenly your Shabbos shirt gets dirty. And now you have to go switch shirts and you don't have a nice shirt for Shabbos and you think to yourself, come on, I was trying to do mitzvah. Did that have to happen? So I slipped. Did my hand have to slip? But Avram teaches us the happiness a person should have and how we should be prepared when things don't go right. That's just the Satan trying to get in our way. And so what if they didn't go perfectly right? That's part of the challenge of doing the mitzvah with a smile on your face. So Avram is walking off of Har Moriah thinking, wow. Wow. I prayed. And I'm walking away alive, and Yitzchak's walking away alive, and I got so close to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I showed him I was willing to do anything he wants. If he tells me he wants it, I'm willing to do it. And Hashem says, for eternity, this merit will stand by my children and grandchildren, and every year on Rosh Hashanah, on this day, the merits will come up to heaven. And he's walking away feeling like I was saved. Imagine a person who is at the World Trade Center, right? And he's he makes it out a second before the building collapses, and he's thrown 30 feet as the building collapses, and because he's thrown, he lands in a pile of mud, but he looks back at all the rubble coming crashing down, and he's alive, and he gets up, and he's got almost no bruises, and he says, wow! And he walks away, only to come home and find that the other plane hit his home and his wife's dead. So Avraham Avinu walks away from the Akedah. He comes home, and what does he find out? That when Sarah heard what happened, she had a massive heart attack and dropped dead. Now what's he supposed to think of the Ribbono Shel Olam? Meaning the Akedah seems to have a beautiful ending. Vayelchu shneihem yachdav. They both walked off the mountain together. Beautiful. They're walking off into the sunset. The only problem is, it doesn't seem to say they lived happily ever after. They walked back home to find mom had a massive heart attack from this whole story. Now what? How do you live with life? That's the Nisayon. Our sages tell us that from the minute Sarah was born, she was supposed to die at that second. But that's not what Avram sees. Long before the Akedah, it was part of the heavenly plan that Sarah would live 127 years. This was her minute to die. But the test was that Avram isn't given that insight. Avram walks into the house and what he sees is, what happened? I thought this had a happy ending. Chazal tell us on the verse in the Megillas Rus, En Aisha Meta, I'm sorry, on the verse in, we're going to read it in Parshas Vayechi. En Aisha Meta Ela Leba'ala, when a woman passes away, it's as though the only one who senses it is her husband, because no one senses it like him. It says when Yaakov is describing Rachel's death, he says, Vani bevoi mi Padan, Meta alai Rachel. As I was coming from Padan Aram, Rachel died on me. What do you mean she died on you? She died on everyone. She died. No, she died on me. I was left a widower. You have three other wives. No, she was my wife. And now I'm all alone. And the rest of life is different. There's a pain when a person, God forbid, loses his wife. So then his life is different. So when Sarah passes away, Avram has to continue life, but he's continuing life different. And as long as Sarah lived, she lived 127 years. He's got a lot to be thankful for. It's still going to be different. And Hashem gives him this final test. We think that Akedah is the final test. Other sources say no. The final test was walking away from the Akedah, coming home to find his wife dead. And from his perspective, this massive heart attack, whatever it was that knocked her out, was as a result of the Akedah. And in life, that's one of the great challenges. We don't know. When was a person supposed to die? How long was a person supposed to live? This week was the yard site of a beautiful boy. This boy was born with multiple defects. From the minute he was born, his parents had to be at his bedside 24 hours a day to ensure he wouldn't choke on his own saliva. The boy lived till about 6 years old. And for 6 years, the family worked on shifts. Every minute, someone had to be with this boy. So there are organizations, there are places where you can enroll such a child, and there were hours in the day when actually there were other people there, but they didn't have a normal night for 6 years. And after 6 years, the boy passed away. And his father, who's a rabbi in a school not far from here, his father came up to speak at the funeral of his son, and his father said, you know, you left us with a great void. I don't know what we're going to do with this void. Because for 6 years, you taught us what it means to love. We thought we knew what it meant to love before you entered our lives. But when we had this beautiful opportunity from the Ribbono Shel Olam to love you for 6 years, where the whole family revolved around you for 6 years, we had an amazing opportunity to learn what it means to be dedicated to someone in our lives. And now that you're gone, I don't know what we're going to do with all that love. We've learned a new meaning for love, which we have to learn where to channel it to. And we want to thank you. We want to humbly thank you for giving us that beautiful opportunity to learn what real love is. That was the father's parting speech. No, we don't get answers. In spite of Avram's great relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam, the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't come in and say, Avram, don't take it so hard. Sarah was supposed to die today. Believe me, it was my plan. No. The nisayon in the 10 tests that Avram has is that gaping silence. His wife is abducted by Pharaoh. What would happen if God would give him a little note and say, don't worry, pal, in 2 days she's back unscathed. But the challenge of life, and we're all living through our tests in life, is that we don't get those notes. Hashem doesn't tell Avram, don't worry, it's all going to be all right. Nor does Hashem tell Avram, Sarah passed away. I know it seems rough, but believe me, this was the original plan. Avram has to deal with life where he does not know what is Hashem thinking. I know he runs the world, but he hasn't given me an explanation. Ki lo yir'ani ha'adam v'chai. Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, no living human can have an understanding as he's living on the planet as to how I run the world. In hindsight, you can look back and suddenly understand. That I can explain. You could look back and understand. But you want to know the present? You want to understand why this makes sense? I'm not telling you. Life is about dealing when you don't understand my ways. And Avram also doesn't understand Hashem's ways. The Medrash says at the end of the Akedah, Avram turns to the Ribbono Shel Olam and says, Ribbono Shel Olam, you told me that Yitzchak was my future. Then you told me to sacrifice him. It would have been legitimate to ask, isn't this a contradiction? And I didn't have an answer, but I didn't ask. I said, if you told me to do it, I guess I have to do it. I didn't have an answer, and I still listened. We like to think that Avraham Avinu, it all made sense to him. The answer is it didn't. Avraham Avinu dealt with life without having answers to all his questions. He had answers to the basic questions. I know God created the world, I know He runs the world, and I know what He wants of me. But do I understand why everything happens on the planet? I don't have an answer to that. He doesn't even understand the commandments he gets. God tells him, go to Canaan, you'll have children. He comes to Canaan and he does not have children. So we look at it and we say, well, it only took 30 years and then he had children. But Avram doesn't know that. You know, Avram hears, go to Canaan, you'll become a great nation. We look today and say, look at what he became. He became a great nation. But he didn't have that. What he had was Hashem saying, go, it'll work. And he comes and it's not working. It doesn't work for a year. It doesn't work for a decade. Anyone here over 30? Yeah, some people here are over 30. So you understand what it means. 33 years and it's not working. 23 years and it's not working. He comes at 70, he comes again at 75, only at 100, 25 years later, does he have a child. 25 years. We like to think, Hashem said it's going to work, right? I made Aliyah, I made this big mitzvah, tremendous mitzvah. Shouldn't life just work for me? But it didn't work for Avram. He made Aliyah and it didn't work for him. Say he made Aliyah again and he made Aliyah a third time until he can make it work. He was always headed back. Always headed back. You know, people think if I have to go and do something in the chutzar, I'll think about it. Eventually I'll get back. No. Avraham Avinu was always headed back. At age 70 he came to Israel and had to leave. His father needed him. He goes back to Haran. At age 75 Hashem tells him come to Israel. There's a famine. He has to leave. He goes down to Egypt. But once the famine's over he comes back to Israel. He's always headed back. And now he comes back from the Akedah to find his wife dead. And the great Nisayon, Avram is going to have to deal with that. And he doesn't get answers. Our sages say Sarah had tremendous beauty. So yes, she grew old. And then, when she had this blessing that she could conceive, so she regained her youth. So that's why the Pasuk describes her as 100 years and 20 years and 7 years. She was like a 20-year-old in her natural beauty. She was like a 7-year-old that she didn't need any makeup. Sarah was gorgeous when she passed away. And Avram comes to eulogize her and weep for her. To eulogize her and weep for her. Eulogizing. What's the mitzvah of eulogizing? So, first of all, we're honoring the deceased. We're making mention of how precious they are. You ever sit down to eat and a bug comes crawling on the table? You don't want to get up, so what do? Right? Dead bug. Do you stop and think about the bug? Or do you go on and eat your lunch? Maybe you wash your hands off, right? But do you think about the bug? So you could say, a human being died, why is it any different than a bug? When we take the time to eulogize a human being, what we're saying is, that was something special. That was a creation that was a reflection of godliness in the world. The time that we take to eulogize, the words that we say, the thought that we invest, the shiva that a person sits and mourns, that's all a way of respecting and showing the value of life. When we respect those that have passed away, we're actually showing the value of life. So Avram is going to come and eulogize her. Guys, this is a skill you should develop. You never know when you'll have to do it. So eulogizing is something which you think, when will I have to do it? I also thought, when would I have to do it? And then one day I get a phone call. A great uncle passed away, and none of his kids are getting eulogized or anything. Can I say a eulogy? So I said, you know, I think I met him when I was 3 years old. I don't remember who he is. Give me his name, and what am I supposed to say about him? So I got an outline of who he was, and I went and I gave the only eulogy for the person. It's a skill. It's worthwhile to learn. Saying you take the time, you think about it, and part of it is if you can look at a person with a positive eye, if you could speak positively about someone, then you could speak positively about anyone. The story goes: a rabbi was summoned. They asked him. This is a true story, as far as I know. They asked him to eulogize someone. He never met the person, but the family said, "We want you to eulogize." So he comes and he sees his sons. They're all members of this motorcycle gang. He sees rows of motorcycles, chains, drugs, everything, you know. He walks up and he says, "Where are the sons?" So these three big guys come out, and he asks them, they say, "Short but beautiful, Rabbi. That's what we want. All our friends came here. We want a short speech but a beautiful speech. It doesn't have to be more than 30 seconds. But say something nice about him. We don't know what to say." So the rabbi gets up, and he looks at the coffin, and he looks at the sons, and they're all standing there waiting for pearls of wisdom. And he says, if we want to understand him, we can just look at his children, and we can understand what a wonderful person he was. And they applauded him, "Rabbi, that was the nicest eulogy we ever heard," right? Okay, but in truth, you have to find a way to say nice things. It says that when Joshua passed away, we had just entered the land of Israel. We had just finished dividing the land of Israel. And everyone was busy settling the land, building their houses. So Joshua, their leader, passes away, and they give him a eulogy, and they bury him. And right afterwards, there was a tremendous volcano, and all the sages of Israel were killed. And it says that there was a danger for all the people of Israel because Hashem was so upset at us. How could it be that Joshua made the sun stop and he passes away and you don't give him a proper eulogy? So eulogizing is very important. The deceased deserves and his soul needs a proper eulogy. On the other hand, it says that if we say compliments that are lies, if we say things that are fallacious about the deceased, so in heaven they summon the soul and they say, "Hey, we heard about you that you gave millions to charity. Well, let's see. Your bank account says you had millions. The charities say you did not give millions. Well, buddy, why didn't you give millions to charity?" It says that when we say a compliment that's a fallacy, so then in heaven they summon the soul up and they say, "Wait a second, why didn't you do that?" So it's bad for the soul. We have to be careful when we eulogize a person to say things that are true, to say beautiful things about the person, but not to exaggerate, to say it like it is. So Avram, it says he came to eulogize her and weep over her. The Talmud says, "Kol amorid dim'a al adam kasher, whoever sheds a tear over a kosher person gets his sins forgiven." So it's very important that a person should shed a tear over someone that's kosher, should express sorrow over someone kosher that's passed. It says, "Igra despeda deluye." The wages for saying a hesped is if you've aroused people to tears. A person, as he's saying a eulogy, should cry a little, should arouse other people to cry. We had a student a number of years ago who passed away, and I was asked to eulogize, and as I was giving the eulogy, I started crying, because that's what it says in the Gemara. It's important, you should cry, that arouses other people to cry. People got very concerned, like, "Rabbi, you're taking it too hard." "No, I'm not, he died. You're supposed to cry, the person died." So, on the other hand, the Talmud says that there's a balance. We're supposed to cry, we're supposed to care, and we're not supposed to let it get out of hand to the point where a person can cry for 3 years straight. There's a balance. The first 3 days, a person is overtaken with grief, and afterwards a little bit less, and a person has to come out of it. And if a person does not come out of it, what he's saying is, Creator, I don't approve of the way you're running the world. And in heaven, he's taken to task for that. There's this balanced approach. The first day is the most painful. A person is considered completely devastated. And then 3 days are considered 3 days of weeping. That's why the first 3 days, only close friends come to the Shiva. And then you take the final 4 days of the Shiva, right? 7 days. And the final 4 days are days where a person is not active. He's sitting and pondering and absorbing, and he's in pain, but he's not weeping all the time. And then a person has shloshim, the 30 days, till he comes out of it. But all these days count from day one, from the day of passing. 3, 7, 30. And then for a parent, we go on for a year. So we should be busy with happy things. Avram, in spite of the fact that he's... Yes? Yes?
One question regarding... Because you're talking about, like, Sarah, how she regained her beauty, and even though she was in an old age. And in reference to... To Rivka, yeah. And we all hear about things regarding modesty and shouldn't look to a girl, shouldn't say if a girl's beautiful, shouldn't derive maybe pleasure from a girl's beauty. And here the Torah comes and states like explicitly that she was a beauty, she was a very beautiful woman.
You're talking about Rivka.
Yeah.
So let's wait till we get to Rivka. We'll get there. Yes. I didn't hear you. Yes. I said shedding a tear over a kosher person. I said the Talmud says he who sheds a tear over a kosher person will have his sins atoned for. That's a great merit in heaven. But I didn't say you only eulogize a kosher person. We eulogize a person based on their deeds. We try to find something good to say about them.
But you eulogize a non-kosher person,
you cry. No, it doesn't say there's anything wrong with that. A person also cries because it's their relative and they care. So that's a nice play. It's nice you noticed that. I purposely used the word kosher person because that's the terminology of the Talmud. To you it sounds big, but in actuality I used it to diminish what I was saying. Because if I would say if one cries over a righteous person or a kind person, then I would be taking someone on a higher level. When the Talmud says a kosher person, the Talmud means a basic kosher Jew. I mean, someone who in general is keeping the Torah as best as he can. I think everyone's here is a kosher person. It means the most basic Jew, who's keeping things on the most basic level. Sometimes you have someone who doesn't know any better. They could also be a kosher person. There's a person who grew up in a location where he didn't know how an Orthodox Jew is supposed to behave. He did what he knew. He knew that you donate to the UJA, on Yom Kippur you come to shul, you buy matzahs to eat with your herring lox and cream cheese. You know, that's what he knew about Judaism. So that might be a kosher Jew too. He did the best he could, the best he knew how. I'm saying, I'm serious. You guys are laughing. I'm not laughing. I'm saying kosher doesn't have to mean he's keeping all 613. Ideally, he should. Okay. That's a general term.
I have a question about the Akedah. Should I wait until after?
You should be here, God willing, in 51 weeks, and then we'll be up to the Akedah. Or on Thursday night, you could ask what you'd like. But I was hoping you'd be here in 51 weeks. Okay. I can do that. Okay, so... Avram turns to the people of Chet. The people of Chet have all come to participate in the funeral process for Sarah. Our sages say this was a great kindness they did, and they were repaid for it. One of the acts of kindness that every Jew is supposed to do is to show kindness to the deceased and the family of the deceased. One of the mitzvos of Gemilus Chesed is Levaya, attending a funeral process. You don't have to go the whole way. By walking four footsteps, you've already done the mitzvah, if possible, and if one is close to the deceased, so then we do walk the whole way. Avram comes and tells them, please give me a portion to bury my family. He's telling them a new concept, because in those days, they would take the bodies and use them. They'd make vessels out of them. They'd make carpets out of them. They'd make pictures out of them. They'd do all kinds of things, but they would not bury them in a way that showed any thought about a future resurrection. By Avram's insistence, I want to make a family plot, he's telling them, the world's not over. We invest in the burial as well, because the soul is coming back. That's why a Jew who's cremated may not be buried in a Jewish cemetery, because we say he's done the final act of denying the world to come, denying the resurrection of the dead, assuming he did it of his own volition, right? We're not talking about Auschwitz. I'm saying a Jew who asks to be cremated is making a declaration, I don't believe in the resurrection of the dead. That's wrong. So we say, okay, that the ashes don't get buried in a Jewish cemetery. It's against the Jewish belief. That's what Avram's teaching them. There's a point in burial. We do bury the deceased. And we invest in that burial. And they initially say, bury wherever you like. And he says, no, I want to make this official. I want to change the zoning laws here. I want you to approve that this cave will be burial plot for my family. And Ephron says, what's the big deal? 400 silver coins. Don't worry, it's a deal. And Avram says, fine, let's get out the paper. Let's bring the witness. Let's sign the deal. You will notice in life that very often people tell you, what's the big deal? A few days ago, I walked into a supermarket. I had my laptop in my bag. So the guard tells me, leave your bag here. I asked the guard, are you taking responsibility for my bag? The guard said, I said, leave your bag here. I said, I heard you. And I said, are you taking responsibility for my bag? And he calls his supervisor. And the supervisor says, he told you to leave the bag here. I said, right. And I asked you, are you guys taking responsibility for the bag? You'll notice the game, right? They're not answering my question. They're just telling you what they want. So he says to me, you got $1 million in the bag? Just leave the bag there. I said, you didn't answer the question. Are you taking responsibility for the bag? And he said, fine, you could take it. It blew me away. What's the game here? I know that guards, when they take your bag, they're not watching it. They walk away, they go to coffee break, they say, what do you want? I didn't take responsibility for your bag. I've seen that. So I'm supposed to leave my laptop with him when he's not taking responsibility. All I did was ask. I asked, are you taking responsibility? I would have left him the bag, but let him take responsibility for it. He wants me to leave it, and he's not willing to take responsibility. So, I'm saying, but Ephron did the same game. Avram says, I want to cut a deal with you. And Ephron says, who cares about 400 silver coins? What he did was actually up the price. He says, like 400 coins, like that's the price. That was way overpriced. And Avram listens closely. We had a student that passed away here. We couldn't find him. First, he went missing. This was a student that showed up every Friday to class. And when he didn't show up one Friday, I knew something went wrong. So when I realized what went wrong, I said, we're not having class today, we're looking for him. And we stopped. We searched the whole night. We finally found him in the morning. We found his body. And the police were searching, and fine. So the police commissioner was very, very nice, right? And in Judaism, we don't do autopsies if it's not necessary. You honor the body. So the commissioner tells me, No problem. We won't have to do an autopsy on the body. We'll send it for burial. But we need a government approval. So we come to court to get the government approval, and after a long time that he keeps promising me no problem, the police show up and say, we want an autopsy. So I said, wait a second, you guys told me there's no need for an autopsy. Why are you turning on me? What they didn't know is that I had a lawyer prepared, and I had a lawyer there, and legally it was illegal what they were asking for. There was no legal grounds to do an autopsy on the body. But all along they were lying to me one way, and then when the time came, when we were standing in front of the judge, so then they pulled their wild card on me. What they didn't know is that I had a wild card too. I had a lawyer there already, and we won the case. Like the judge told them, you know, by what grounds? But I didn't know the questions to ask. The lawyer knew what questions to ask. So, what was interesting was, what? Why did I have a lawyer?
No, what happened to the boy?
He had a heart attack. He was sick. He had the flu, and he just didn't wake up. He went to sleep with the flu, and he didn't wake up. So, what was interesting was that when I spoke to the police commissioner, at one point we were working together trying to find the body, so I said to him, you know, maybe we could work together on other things. We're in the same community. We're working. And he tells me, you know, if you want that to work, we should talk about it over lunch. I said, over lunch? Okay, I don't know. We're sitting here in the morning. Don't you want to talk now? And I didn't get the hint. The guy's telling me, I want you to take me out to lunch, buy me a steak, and I'm willing to have cooperation. I didn't get the hint. You know, I said, you know, lunch is in 3 hours. He said to me, yeah, I could tell you good restaurants if you want to take me out. So after like 2 or 3 times, he spells it out to me. I was in shock. I wasn't prepared for that. Like, that's what you want? I said, I'm sorry, I can't afford to take you out to lunch. I wish you well. Goodbye. I should have learned from Avram. Avram is in the middle of a most moving time in his life. He's just walked away from the Akedah. And he's coming to bury his wife, Sarah. And he's just found her dead. And Ephron tells him, what's 400 silver coins between me and you? And Avram catches it. Avram, as the Pasuk says, Vayishma Avraham el Ephron. What does the Pasuk have to tell me that? The Pasuk tell me he heard him. Sometimes in life we have to hear what they're saying. Not just the words. What's he saying between the lines? When a guy tells you, we could talk about it over lunch, he's telling me something. I didn't catch it. Vayishma Avraham el Ephron. Avram heard what Ephron was saying. Ephron was saying, I'm going to overprice it, and I know you want that land, so I'm going to take every penny out of you for it. And Avram says, fine. Everyone's here. I'll pay you. Fine. And right away he signs it. When you guys come to sign a deal, you will say things orally. You will say, look, but I want to make sure that you do A and B and C. And the other person's going to say, sure. Put it in the contract. Before you sign the contract. People think you're a nudnik, but it's not. We're all nice before we sign the contract. And that's the time to bring up all the sticky points and put them in writing. Because you will find that the next day the guy will look at you and say, come on, over that, you're making an issue. What do you mean, come on? We agreed. So then put it in writing. You want something? Put it in writing. There's nothing wrong with it. There's something wrong with leaving it amorphous. And we're very comfortable leaving it amorphous because it feels sticky to bring it up. You got to bring it up all before contract. You're going to buy a house. You want them to leave the fridge there. They're leaving the closets there. Write it down. Everything should be written. Why did Chazal say that if you come to me and say, can I borrow 20 shekel and I trust you and you trust me, no one's going to make up lies. Why did they say you should not lend that money without writing a little contract? Just take out a little piece of paper, it could be a receipt, you write on the back of the receipt, I borrow 20 shekel, I will give them back within such and such time, you write a date, you sign it, finished. Doesn't take long, and that's how you should give a loan. You shouldn't give a loan without that. Why? Not because they suspect I'm a liar or you're a liar, but because we forget. Or when we talk, I understand things my way, you understand things your way. If we write it, there's no room for misunderstandings. This is what we wrote. So Chazal said, you're not supposed to give a loan without a written contract to ensure that you will not have misunderstandings. Even though it's a minor loan. You want to give him a gift? Give him a gift. You want to give him a loan? Write it out. That's halacha and Shulchan Aruch. No, I tell my friends, when my friends ask me for a loan, I say, because it's not halacha, even though I trust you, if I didn't trust you, then the contract's not worth the paper it's written on. I'm not going to sue you over 20 shekel. Obviously, I trust you, but you understand, the halacha says we should do this, we should do this, so we're doing it. Yeah, it's always good to hide behind the halacha. And you'll find in life that it actually works. There's a lot of logic to it. We do forget. We do have misunderstandings. So Avram puts it all in writing. And Avram has this clarity even though he is so hurt with Sarah's passing. And that's a responsibility we have to learn, that pain should not take over a person's life. Even though sometimes things are painful, a person has responsibility. He has to deal. He can't just say, I was discombobulated. So get recombobulated. You know, focus. Yes. Okay. So we've made it to Sheni and Bezrat Hashem. On Thursday, we'll finish the parasha. We have all the story of Shiduchim in this week's parasha. How do you find a girl? That's this week's parasha, right? Go to the well. Okay, so we'll talk about it. Thursday, Bezrat Hashem.